Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. We're going to talk about the concept of dying and how we hold it and what we can do with it to make our lives better and to help others live better and healthier and happier and stronger, with the understanding that at some point we have to hear the wind chimes chime. And I say that because that's the name of the book that I've read called When the Wind Chimes Chime. And we're going to speak with the author of this book about the concept of dying and to die well. And that's the author, Donna Corso. Donna, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter. Delighted to be here.
Well, I'm so glad that we could talk. This is a very important subject to me. I've done a lot of shows on death and all kinds of aspects of it in all manifestations. And this book really covers a lot of ground. It's very important because you look at how society treats death in ways that often aren't applicable to our needs. And you use it through, first of all, in the book, using a story of a little boy who had cancer and had a very difficult path with it, but a very enlightened path, and he had enlightened parents. Can you talk a little bit about Andres?
Yes, Andres was a seven-year-old boy, and he was diagnosed with osteosarcoma. Now, this is a time when he, you know, it was really important for him to be surrounded by as much care as he could and to have a peaceful passing because, well, to go back to his story, he was diagnosed and taken into the hospital. They did x-rays, and they did more and more and more x-rays, and eventually the doctor said, we want to amputate his arm because that's where the cancer was, and part of his lungs and part of his ribs, and give him chemo and give him radiation. Now, the parents, the father of the little boy, he had done research. He had just put his whole life on hold and done research 24/7, and he discovered that there were many, many hundreds of children, in fact 300 that he discovered, who had followed their doctor's instructions, which were very similar, the chemo, the radiation, the amputation, and every single one of them died anyway, and they died a horrible death. And so Gordy, the father, and Joey, the mother, decided, what if there's some alternative, something, some other way that we can help our child? And so when they said that to the doctor, isn't there some alternative? The doctor immediately said, if you try anything like that, we are going to have Child Protective Services on your doorstep immediately. We will take your child and we'll make him ward of the state, and we will do this operation anyway.
And they'll likely take his other children away, too.
Yes, eventually they said they could take his other children away, too, because they were considered to be negligent parents. Now, I'm not trying to say that there's no validation for Child Protective Services. They certainly have a purpose, but not in all cases. It has to be a case-by-case thing, and Gordy and Joey are very conscious and very loving parents. They were certainly not trying to avoid getting him help, but it was already clear that he was dying because, well, first of all, there were a lot of mistakes made by the medical community. There were missed appointments where they would show up for appointments and wait for hours and hours and find out that you know, they had forgotten to put it on the calendar, things like that. But they also took extensive x-rays. Every time they were referred to a new doctor, instead of referring to the previous x-rays, they would take new ones, new x-rays, new MRIs. And this all, my understanding is, can exacerbate cancer. So by the time they were told that they had to do all of these invasive treatments, it had already been discovered that the cancer had metastasized. It was already in other bone tissue and therefore going through his blood system. So there really wasn't any hope. If he had gone through the chemo, radiation, and all of that, it may have prolonged his life for a few weeks, but it would have been in a horrible condition. So they simply wanted, if he was going to die, they simply wanted him to be able to die peacefully rather than in horrible conditions. And what Gordy found out in his research was that there had been other parents who also objected to having their children receive these kind of treatments, and they were incarcerated. They were actually put in jail for bucking the system. And then their child would be in the hospital and would die without even having his parents with him. So they certainly didn't want that to happen with Andreas.
It's amazing. And yet they did try other things, and at one point Gordy left the country with Andreas and went to, I think it was China,
right,
where they found some advanced healers there who looked at his son and actually said, "We're sorry, because even though we've cured many people with these kinds of conditions, we see that your son is only here for a short time, and it's not in his lifetime to pass through this thing and grow up." And
absolutely. And it took a while before they could do this. They had to go through, like I said, all of the medical things that they were required to do, because according to the law, if your child is under 16, you don't have the choices that you would have as an adult. You, the law is that you have to go along with whatever the doctor says he wants to do. So, but after time, they just got so discouraged with everything, and they were realizing that possibly Andreas was being used for research. And so anyway, they finally made a decision, we've had enough, we're not going to do this anymore. And what they did, Gordy had a connection with someone in China who was a medical doctor, and he did Qigong and Chinese herbs, but he was a regular medical doctor as well. And he said that he would work with Andreas for free if they could get him over there. So Gordy managed to get the passports all together, and it was around Christmas time, and the whole family couldn't go. That would be too expensive. So Gordy and Andreas went together, and they got to China, and the next day they met with the doctor. And the doctor had with him two old men who were Qigong masters, and these were men from a 6,000-year lineage of Qigong masters. So they all got around Andreas and did whatever they did, and then all of a sudden they bowed to him and left. So Andreas went over to the interpreter and said, "Well, what did they say? Can they help him?" And the interpreter said, what they said was that they have identified Andreas as a very ancient soul, and that this is his journey, and that the cancer is his method of leaving his body. He is ready to leave this planet. And they told Gordy that neither your Western invasive medicine nor our Qigong is going to be able to make this soul stay, because this is part of his soul path. They also told Gordy that Andreas is the teacher and you are the student, so listen carefully to whatever your son talks about, because I think he had a very important message, and I think that the 7 years that he spent on this planet had a purpose.
And I think part of it is to empower this story so that eventually you would write it.
I think so. He seemed to have some intuitive idea that one day a book would be written, because he said to his dad, "I want my book to heal the children of the world, help heal the children of the world." So somehow he knew there was going to be a book. So when I heard his story, I somehow knew that I was supposed to write this book, because I think it's such an important message, and we all need to really understand how out of balance our medical system has become, and even our just the way we feel about death and dying. It's all become so out of balance, because it's really a part of the natural life cycle. And when we can really accept it as part of the natural cycle of life, it doesn't have to be fearful. It doesn't have to be something that we try to hide from or run from or think that we can avoid it, because we can't avoid it.
Well, something in your book, there was a part that you were talking about the history of dying in our society, going way back, and before there was modern medicine, before people had any idea that you could control life or death effectively. I mean, I guess there were always herbs and, you know, remedies and doctors that were sufficient for the time, but not like now, where they can actually keep people alive even if their brain is dead.
Right.
And so there's this idea that we're all to be here much longer than we used to think, or even that death is something that we can interfere with. And in the past, and you talk about this in the book, death was much more accepted as a process, and people weren't as afraid of it, and they didn't hold life as dearly, even to the point of destroying people through medicine in order to keep them alive. And so in the past, there were a lot of abuses. Humanity was certainly not evolved. But because death wasn't as, people didn't have as high an expectation of staying alive as they do now.
Right.
So death is more an acceptable path, and people took it more in stride.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was acceptable. Back in those days, of course, we didn't have the long life lifespan that we have now. And a lot of people died of different diseases that now we have cures for. But it was just accepted. When one was dying, their family gathered around them, and even children would gather around the dying one. And, of course, they would be in their home, not taken away to a hospital.
Well, there was a reason in the past that there were such large families, because there was so frequent deaths,
mm-hmm.
that you needed more numbers in order to keep the species alive.
That's true. They often lost their children in particular. And, I mean, I'm sure it was heartbreaking, but it was just not the way it is today, where we will go to such extreme measures just to keep someone alive, whether an adult or a child, just to keep them alive for a few more months or weeks or days, but in such a way that it's making them miserable, instead of just saying, you know, I don't want to lose you, but it's your time. And so just gathering around that person and helping them to have what they call it, a good death in those days. A good death, I guess, is a peaceful death, and we can all achieve that.
Well, now, actually, old age nowadays is becoming very difficult, because people are living so much longer than they used to.
Yes.
That so many people's bodies have let them down, and there are millions and millions of people out there who have no quality of life at all.
Mm-hmm.
They're just being taken care of. They're not productive in any form.
Mm-hmm.
They're in very bad moods.
Absolutely.
Often their minds are limited as well as their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And are we supposed to live that way? Isn't there a time where we just say, okay, it's time to give up the ghost?
Well, yeah, it's a natural thing. So why should we want to? I don't think these people want to continue to live. And there's a case right now in Pennsylvania that I read about the other day, about a 93-year-old man who has had like all kinds of diseases, and he was so miserable, and he just wanted to die. He was actually in hospice care, and his daughter, who was a registered nurse, gave him some morphine, which is legal. You can give them morphine when they're dying. They can have as much as they need to keep them free of pain. But she gave him morphine, and he accepted it himself. He took it himself. And shortly thereafter, the hospice nurse showed up and panicked and called 911. And what they did was rush him to the hospital, a 93-year-old. They revived him. Now what? And he died 4 days later after getting pneumonia in the hospital. But what kind of sense is it when someone is that old and really wants to just go and then has the means, and then they bring them back? So often, you know, you call 911, their job is to revive people. So it's important that we let our families know what our needs are, what our desires are around end of life, and not do foolish things like reviving someone who has just almost achieved a peaceful death.
And once people do go into hospice, often it's known not to revive them.
Yeah, that's why I'm not clear why this hospice nurse would have done what she did. I don't really know the case. But the thing is, the daughter who was just trying to help her father, the daughter now has to go to court. It's a legal nightmare for her. And they're asking people to actually call their attorney general to try to get this stopped. Because, you know, no one should have to be punished for helping their elderly relative be out of pain. That's
ridiculous.
That's a lot of balance.
And yeah, but that's the medical community trying to keep everything in a tight vise.
It seems like it, yes.
Mm-hmm. But I want to come back to this idea that we reach a point where it's senseless to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the great masters of death and dying is a woman who invented dying, actually, at least in the hospitals, because she used to go into hospitals and ask who's dying, and nobody would own up to anybody in the hospital dying. And she said, and then she would actually, the doctors wouldn't. And then she'd talk to the nurses, and the nurses knew who was dying, because they were more in their hearts. And she became famous. That was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Absolutely, yes.
And I spent a day with her years ago. I was very happy about that. But what happened with her is that she suffered some strokes and became disabled and lost her quality of life. And she was bitterly, for years, she was bitterly complaining that she invented this. Why can't she die like everybody else? And she was kept alive, disabled, in a way that she was totally unhappy with. And eventually she died. But it was really torture for her not to die when she wanted to.
Yeah, I had heard that about Elizabeth. Actually, I worked for someone who used to be her personal assistant. And I know that Elizabeth was the one that taught everyone about the five stages that we go through and, you know, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then finally acceptance. And, of course, we go in and out of all those stages. But when we finally reach acceptance and we're ready for death, and then the medical community comes along and prevents us from being able to achieve our goal of having a peaceful death, that's really frustrating. You know, we can keep people alive so far beyond any quality of life and beyond what they want, and it's just kind of gotten out of hand, you know, the power that we have. Just because we've discovered ways of keeping people alive doesn't mean we should use it all the time.
Right. Well, I'm very hopeful about the future, because I do believe we're coming into an age of greater enlightenment, and a lot more people are going to wake up and hold the power in some way to change the system.
I hope you're right.
I hope so. I'm not confident, but I'm optimistic that, you know, it is an awakening. And a lot of it is due to the internet, to books like yours, to opportunities for people to learn the truth about how the corporate establishment is harming us and continuing to harm us through buying out Congress and state legislatures and having laws passed that create a stronger and stronger grip on our lives that don't give us choice.
Right. I want to have hope that we can turn that around as well. But, you know, it takes a lot of people to really educate themselves and become aware. And even though where I live in a community that is really conscious. And when I go out into the rest of the world, though, I see that so many people are not aware. You know, people really are just trying to survive. They're worried about their own families, their own health, their finances, their future, all of it. And so they're not really paying attention too much to what's, what's happening. So it really takes a lot of people to be not only conscious and aware, but active, to take action, to be actively involved in making the changes that we really can see need to be changed, need to be made on the planet. So I hope we can have that critical mass of people that really wake up and become aware. And because we're creating the world that our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren are going to be inhabiting. You know, we're creating a big mess that they're going to have to clear up. So it's really important that we be involved now, and that people, we have so many distractions now, too.
And we don't want the mess to go too far.
No, we don't.
Because it looks like it in terms of like the bee population, and they're being poisoned by the Monsanto seeds and other chemicals that the FDA is approving, and around the world they're promoting it, forcing countries to use these distorted chemicals. And
yes, absolutely, and that's why we've had so many big demonstrations where people can really take a stand, you know, and of course that was big right here where I live, but I don't know how many other communities really did come together around the GMO situation. And, you know, we need to do that around fluoride too, because fluoride is another thing.
And what community are you in, since you've talked about it twice now?
Oh, well, I live in Southern Oregon, which is very smoky right now, unfortunately.
I live
in Ashland, Oregon.
Dry times.
Yeah. A lot of fires going on right now, so I have my doors closed.
It's
choking out there. But it is a very aware community.
Sure.
And we don't fluoridate our water here. And one of the things that I did bring up in the book, and I'm not promoting myself as an expert. You know, I certainly have done a little bit of research of my own, which has convinced me that I don't want to drink fluoridated water. But I encourage people to do their own research because I'm not an expert. But there has been a lot of talk, even by the National Cancer Institute. They indicated that there may be a possible relationship between cancer and fluoridated water. And in particular, osteosarcoma, which is what Andreas died of, and in particular, children around the age of 7, which is exact, and boys, which is exactly what Andreas was, because they have a growth spurt, and when they have that growth spurt, the fluoride goes right into the bones. It also affects soft tissue. It affects the pineal gland, which affects, of course, melatonin production. It goes, I mean, we're told that it's going to help our teeth, but I see a lot of research that says the opposite of that. A lot of dentists are actually reporting many more cases of fluorosis, which is a tooth problem, you know, where the teeth are all discolored and
Softened, actually, inside.
Absolutely, yeah. Softened. And so it's really doing more harm than good.
Right.
But the whole situation, I look at it as having two sides. One is the chemical industry that has a product that they need to sell, and they need to convince us that we want it. And when the fluoride was going into the air, it was creating air pollution, so we had the Clean Air Act, and they couldn't do that anymore. They put scrubbers into their smokestacks. But then, of course, that produced water that was laced with the fluoride concoction, because it's not just fluoride. It also has mercury and cadmium and arsenic and
lead. Amazing. It's amazing. But
yeah.
Actually, what I want to do is relate this to your book and to... And I know we are in terms of Andreas, mm-hmm. but there are aspects of dying, and we are talking about how fragile our Earth is and how we are on the Earth now because of industry getting out of control,
mm-hmm.
and we're trying to harness it back in and create a more natural environment. And I'm sure that we will someday. We just don't want the planet to be too harmed first.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, we still have to deal with our own lives and frailties on this planet. And one of the things that was hinted about, and I don't know where I read it in the book or on the cover, and the back cover maybe, but it was a story about that Gordy was a hypnotherapist. And that he had done some hypnosis with Andreas.
Right.
And I think that, to me, I would love to hear more about the opportunities for anybody who's dealing with dying or potential dying,
mm-hmm.
to actually go into a hypnotic regression, not only through this life, but in between lives, to identify the choices we've made and who we know out there, because when we get in between lives, we actually are in our community out there of our guides and our families and so many people who are out there who aren't here anymore or who didn't come into this life, who are out there supporting us. And then we learn so much about what our plan was for this life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That is my belief system. I know a lot of people don't have that belief system that we have more than one lifetime or that there is a time between lifetimes. But for me, that is what's so. And that's why I wrote in the very beginning and end of the book, I wrote something called The Soul Plan. And I wrote it so that people could read it in whatever way they wish. If they want to read it as a fantasy, that's fine. But for me, I really believe that that's what happens, that we are part of a soul family. And that before we come into each lifetime, that we have a plan for that lifetime. And I really believe that Andreas's purpose was to be here for 7 years and to call attention to the medical community and for other reasons, too. He had more purpose than just that, of course. But anyway, going back to the hypnotherapy that you mentioned, yes, Gordy had created a wonderful guided visualization that he led Andreas through many times, you know, after he was diagnosed and they knew that. And possibly even before, I'm not sure. But when they knew that there was a possibility of his leaving the planet, Gordy created a wonderful guided visualization where Andreas would be riding on the back of Pegasus the horse, flying through the air, and he would take him to a place where he would meet with the light beings or the angels, whatever you want to call it, that he would soon be living among. And that really brought a lot of comfort to Andreas. So at the very end of his life, in the very last few moments, when Andreas was in the hospital at the very end and he took his oxygen mask off, and when Gordy went over to put the oxygen mask back on Andreas's mouth, Andreas said, "Turn off my lungs." Dad, he looked in his daddy's eyes and said, "Turn off my lungs." And I believe that's because he understood that it was the breath, his breath, that was holding him in this life, in physicality. And as soon as Gordy allowed him to take charge of his own final moments and be without the oxygen, and he died just moments later, but he died peacefully. And so Gordy led him through that same visualization, but he told him, "You know, you love being over there with the angels and the light beings. You don't have to come back this time. We'll see you later. We'll catch up with you later."
Right.
And I think that really helped Andreas to ease out.
I think it can help everybody if they
absolutely
can do it.
Yeah.
And when people say they don't believe in past lives or life between lifetimes, I just say, go get hypnotized. You'll believe it because you'll have a firsthand experience of it.
Well, that's true, but I also feel we have to honor everyone's belief system and religious background. And
oh, sure. A lot of people aren't even going to even begin to look at something like that.
Right, yes. Yeah. So it's maybe really not important, but for those of us who do have that belief system, it can be so helpful, and
right,
it becomes so clear that that's what's true for us, but not right everyone's right there at the time. But, you know, we can all, at the end of our life, when we know that we are coming near the end, it's so important to have a friend that can be with us in that way. And some people call that an anamkara. There's a man named, I think his name is Richard Grove, who wrote the American Book of Death and Dying, something like that. I took a couple classes with him here in Oregon, and he taught about an anamkara, which would be a spiritual midwife or a death coach, you know, some other terms for mm-hmm it. But someone who can just be with us in those final times. You know, it might be a relative, but it might not be. It might be someone that's not as attached to or as grieving, you know, but a person who can just be there for us
be
in whatever
present
way we need.
Right. That's great. And we only have about a minute left, so I want to come back to the title of the book, which is When the Wind Chimes Chime.
Yes.
And you're Donna Corso, C-O-R-S-O.
Right.
And how can people get the book or contact you or what?
Well, yes, in a couple of days we're doing a book launch. So if anyone goes to my website, which is donnacorso.com, you will see on there that if you purchase the book, you will get all kinds of free gifts.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And these are pretty good things. Some of the authors who endorsed my book, Neil Donald Walsh, Barbara Marx Hubbard, Reverend Joan Gattuso, actually Shirley MacLaine is offering a month subscription free to ShirleyMacLaine.com. Lynn Andrews is offering something, and several other people. So you'll get access to all of those things once you purchase my book through my website during, you know, the coming short time, so I encourage people to get on there quickly.
Sounds great.
Do that. Yes.
Donna, it's so wonderful to talk with you. I loved your book. It's so important.
Thank you.
And I think a lot of people should be reading it, and it'll help them deal with this. So, Donna Corso, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Well, thank you, Peter. It's been a delightful time.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HEART River.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.